Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudoux.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
We're excited to welcome two special guests today to a panel on freelancing during the COVID pandemic, our favorite topic lately. They are Karen Katchik, who is a freelance French to English chemistry translator, who's originally from the UK and she's now based in Colorado, and Alex Gansmeier. He's a German English conference interpreter who's based in Munich. Welcome, Karen and Alex, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you ladies.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. It's really such a fun topic, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we're going to make it fun with the four of us. So as Eve mentioned, we thought it might be interesting for our listeners to hear a panel discussion between four freelancers who work in different languages and subject areas and translation and interpreting, and we'll all give our take on how our professional lives have changed or stayed the same during the pandemic, as well as some tips for our listeners to apply in their own businesses. So I thought we could kick things off by talking about the initial impact on all of our businesses and whether we noticed a dramatic decrease in work in, for example, March through May of 2020, or just how things looked initially. So Karen, let's start with you, and maybe if you could tell us a little bit about your client base and how your work volume initially changed or didn't.
Yes, right. So my client base, my translation work is split roughly evenly among LSCs and direct clients. And that makes up about 75% of my work. 20% is non-native editing. That usually means I'm editing journal articles or other publications written by scientific academics who are writing in English when that isn't their native language. And then 5% is other bits and pieces like training courses or webinars or localization for English, things like that. So the translation dropped off a cliff pretty much evenly among the LSC and direct clients. That's the short answer of what happened in March to May. Localization also dropped off and the non-native editing held up. So that was my spring.
Okay. And Alex, how about you? And given that the reason we invited you on the show is because you're exclusively a conference interpreter, I have a feeling that your answer is going to be pretty dramatic. How are March through May for you?
Very relaxed, I have to say. Yeah. Not a lot going on. No, so actually, I remember I was at a conference in Berlin at the end of February, and you know, it was two booths, so four colleagues, and we were literally discussing what impact COVID was going to have, if any, because we didn't really know. And as the conference progressed, one email came in after another, and everything got canceled. Literally, the entirety of March was completely wiped out.
So like the world just crumbled while you were at that conference?
Literally over, it was a Saturday and a Sunday. And by Sunday evening, I think the entirety of March was just wiped out. Wow. Yeah. So that was, it wasn't great, I have to say. The good thing was that it was the four of us and it happened to all of us. So, you know, you kind of realized this was going to be a bigger thing. But yeah, March was empty. Luckily, there was a lot of cancellation fees coming in because it was relatively last minute.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Right.
Yeah. So that happened in the beginning, and then there were just no bookings for April. I think April, literally nothing. The bright side was though that in April, I actually managed to get a new client who had me interpret sort of town hall videos and short like staff announcements regarding the pandemic. So I interpreted those. And nice. A few things just kind of held up anyways, you know, like press conferences, supervisory board meetings, management meetings in general, because they still have to manage and meet. So those kinds of things, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah, they luckily still held up. So it wasn't completely zero, even in April. But yeah, just like Karen said, it completely dropped off a cliff. Yeah, for sure.
Wow. And just to clarify for our listeners, you don't do written translation at all, right?
Oh, yeah. Not if I can avoid it at all. I mean, sometimes there's just no way around it, right? You can say, oh, yeah, I'm happy to do your conference, but I'm not going to translate the agenda. But...
Right. Or like, could you translate the bio of our keynote speaker?
Yeah. I'm not going to say no, I'm not going to do it. But
It's all somewhat related then.
Right.
Exactly.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. So Eve, over to you. March through May. What did it look like?
So I'm more like Karen than you two people here. and I only do translation and I don't do any interpreting. So traditionally I get most of my work from end clients, but about 30% from agencies. And so what was the worst of the close down of the pandemic, a lot of my translation work did drop off, but interestingly that percentage flipped a little bit, and I had more agency work during the worst of the pandemic and the beginning than my normal.
Interesting.
And I'll tell you why. the reason is I do have one agency client for whom I do a lot of editing at certain times of the year seasonally, and so I had more work from them, or just, you know, the normal. And I had a lot of work from them in April, so that I was lucky for that. And so for my other clients, agency and direct clients, there was some work here and there, but not to the usual levels. And I actually had some direct clients just tell me directly that they were pulling back on some specific projects specifically due to the pandemic. So, yeah. So Corinne, give us your scoop on that.
Yeah. So I guess I have, which has proved to be beneficial in the pandemic, a pretty diverse business in the sense that I make about 50% of my income from translation and interpreting and about 50% from online courses and writing books. And of the 50% that's translation and interpreting, I think about 70% of that is translating for direct clients, about 15% interpreting, and about 15% translating for agencies. So March through May, in-person interpreting dropped to basically zero and didn't pick up even online for at least a month. So my primary slash pretty much only interpreting client is the Colorado State Court System, because I have my certification to interpret in the Colorado State Courts, and they are now back on WebEx, and even some, I've done, I think, 3 in-person interpreting assignments lately, but that basically went to zero. Translation work from agencies also dropped to almost zero. And then my direct client translation work stayed stable. It was neither up nor down. I think mostly because I had several large projects that had been planned before the pandemic that went ahead because they were already funded. So whether or not those clients were concerned about finances for the future, they had already funded. One was a major website revision, and one was a NGO project that I work on every year for like 3 to 4 months. So they already had the money for that. And then I got kind of a windfall book translation. So that was stable. And then online courses have been going crazy, selling out as fast as I can post them. And so that was March through May for me.
Thanks, Corinne. Thanks, everybody, for kind of laying the groundwork to how I kind of started out for all of us. And then we wanted to look at, flash forward to today, because the pandemic's been going on for a while, and to know what the today is we're recording this at the beginning of September in 2020. And the question we have for you now is, how are things looking now? Is it the same or is it different, and how have they changed? And in general, can you give us a sense of how much your income for this year might be affected and how concerned you are about that? So Alex, how about if we start with you?
Sure. I have to say, I think it's stable at this point. It's not at the same level as the previous year, obviously, like by a wide margin, but it's stabilized. I think it's also due to the fact that one of my longest running clients, they've actually switched all of their events over to online events. So from 2 big on-site events per year, they've now switched to 5 to 10 online events per month, which, you know, generates a nice regular revenue stream. And all in all, I'm not really worried anymore. I was quite worried in April when there was just nothing, you know, like no new bookings were coming in. I think it was always going to be, I was always going to be fine just because, you know, I live here with my partner. We don't have any children. You know, I think that would of course have changed the entire equation. But at this point, I'm not really worried anymore. I think my general income for this year is probably going to be down maybe like 10-15%, so nothing too dramatic given given the entire situation. I think that's absolutely tolerable. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Oh, that's interesting too, because I mean, not that you'd want it to drop by 10% normally, but that seems within the realm of normal fluctuation.
Probably. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. For freelancing. Okay. Thanks for that. So Karen, tell us what you think.
So, well, end of July, I started to see fairly solid translation volumes. So I started to see translation come back, and that has continued through August. So I'm hopeful that things are beginning to pick up for me. I've had some weeks where I would consider fully booked, which hadn't happened for months. Mm-hmm. I'm currently down 40% year on year, and the last 3 years have been stable for me. So the, okay. So I'm 40% year based on, you know, a solid
several years.
Mm-hmm. That non-native editing that I mentioned is currently 35% of my gross for this year. So you can see where it held up and the translation just didn't. And if I'm only down 25% at the end of the year, I'll take that as successful. You know, if I can pick up enough to be down only 25%, I think that's not unreasonable at this point, given that it's picking up again.
Picking up, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, big hit. I told you the translation just dropped off, and I work hard and fast as a rule. Mm-hmm. You know, I do a lot. Well, I work hard and fast, so I get a lot done, and so I see a big difference when I'm suddenly not under pressure all the time.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, so this is Corinne. I wonder if I could ask you a question. Do you have a sense of why that was? I mean, sort of like when Alex said, well, you know, the management meetings still happen because they're still managing and still meeting unless they're going out of business. Right. Do you have a sense of why your client stopped sending work?
Right. Somewhat. So for the first month, I got the impression that a lot of people were just transitioning to working from home, and everything was just on hold. Well, all these large corporations or whomever I'm working with, from a medium-sized translation company to a large corporation, is transitioning, right? There was a transition phase. Right. Also, quite a lot of the work I do is in patent translation, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and not just patent translation, but related to patent opposition cases, and the EPO in Munich shut down.
Yeah.
Oh,
not a lot going on right now. It did.
All that lucrative patent opposition work, that just stopped for months. And I've had one solid opposition brief that came in the end of July. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, at last, it's coming back. But that's that patent work I do is a big chunk of a big solid, you know, core work for me. So that was one area.
And is the EPO open again?
Yeah, I believe they're open for some cases, but it's still remote, I think. Yeah, there's certainly some, like I said, the flow is beginning to trickle back in. Mm-hmm. I saw my first large brief since the pandemic at the end of July.
And yeah, Alex, for you, when you talk about how your interpreting work pretty quickly rebounded, did your clients already have in place systems to meet remotely, or were they sort of scrambling to set everything up on Zoom, or how is that a German thing that they were able to put this together? Because, I mean, like Karen said, my sense is that at least in the US or for certain clients, that they basically said, like, anything that isn't hair on fire, don't handle it in, you know, late March through early April, because we have to figure out how we're going to have our entire staff working from home and basically how we're going to stay in business remotely. Right. So how were your clients able to do that so quickly?
So there's one big client that has truly been a blessing throughout the pandemic, and they've always done stuff remotely, meaning we're on site, we're at their premises, but they basically just kind of call in, their CEO does whatever statement, and he's calling in from his office or from somewhere else. And then we're basically being streamed either to the shareholders or to the employees. So that was always kind of like a hybrid situation. So that didn't change at all for us, except that we had to wear masks while walking to the booths. So that was really, really great. A lot of other supervisory boards were also always sort of semi-remote, you know, where we would be in a different room or in a different floor.
Or they'd have at least some people who weren't there presenting in person.
Exactly. Okay. So that didn't really change too much setup-wise. Some of the clients started working with interpreting hubs, which luckily in Germany sprung up pretty quickly. But that was exactly like Karen was saying, that was a transitional period where everybody was just trying to figure out what to do and how to set up the hub and, you know, what to do with it.
Right. Do you want to briefly say, for people who haven't heard that term before, can you explain what an interpreting hub is? Because I think there's like two in the entire U.S. So say what an interpreting hub is.
Right, sure. So an interpreting hub is basically an interpreting equipment provider putting up a stationary booth in their own premises, or maybe they rent, you know, a warehouse somewhere or something. And you actually, so the interpreters actually go there, work from the booth, which is like their normal working environment. They have one or two big screens outside the booth where they can see the video transmission of the speakers and also the presentations. And it's quite nice because for the interpreters, it's the most normal, quote unquote, working environment that you can get under these circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it's also nice because you don't have the responsibility for the entire technical setup. So, you know, if I'm doing a Zoom interpreting assignment, it's about my laptop, it's my internet, it's my headphones, speakers, or whatever.
And you think, this is going to be the one day that my internet's going to go down, or, you know.
It's happened more than once.
The one day USB port on my computer fails with no warning, right?
For sure. But, you know, even in those circumstances, I've actually found that people are pretty, forgiving might be the wrong word, but, you know, they're pretty chill just because everybody says, you know, it's a pandemic. Like, what are we gonna do?
You know, people's internet goes down. The computer dies at the worst possible moment. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I think that's also happened. A lot of clients then also transition to Zoom or Microsoft Teams or WebEx or some kind of Frankenstein combination of all of the above. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun. Mm-hmm.
That was a good question, Corinne. I was thinking about, when I mentioned my client that told me that, it's a European client who manufactures sporting goods for, like, you know, not professional. Oh, they do professional too, but the group I work with is the one that manufactures it for community-based sports. And they were saying, you know, they deal with a lot of clubs. And so they, you know, weren't selling equipment to them. I mean, because they do direct sell to clubs. And so they do newsletters and they weren't doing that at that time. So that's kind of, you know, interesting to hear why all the different, you know, like Alex and Karen and you saying why did they actually stop? You know, what
right.
was the
like the ones
on
that
economy?
there wasn't that much of a lag. Why? And the ones that dropped off a cliff. Why? Like, I think that's sort of interesting. Yeah.
Like, I guess it's, at least in my case, it seems to be reflective of something in society that just came to a dead stop, which was what that manufacturer services.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, in-person interpreting work is starting to come back. I've done two in-person, I think now three actually, in-person court interpreting assignments with more scheduled in September. And I would classify them as like weird but doable. I mean, the, you know, sanitary and health precautions are pretty odd. Like, you have to interpret with your mask on and the defendants are wearing masks too, which makes it, you know, it's challenging to understand each other, but it works. Translation work from my European clients went through sort of the usual August lull because they shut down for most of the month. And one of the large projects I was working on, that NGO project, is wrapping up. So I'm now just starting to do some marketing to bring in some more translation work now that that's slowing down. Online courses are still booming. Karen's going to teach her ever popular editing and proofreading class, and that sold out like 3 weeks before the start date. So I think that trend of people pursuing more online classes is definitely going to continue. And I'd say sort of same as Alex, when I ran the numbers, I think my income will be about down to about 10% versus 2019, which I would call, you know, like you said, Eve, within the realm of normal fluctuation. and I also find, I don't know if you guys would, if this is the same for you, that my spending on things like travel and meals out is way, way down.
Oh yeah, so, for sure.
Like, we're starting to sort of venture out a little bit more, but I believe between March 15th and July 15th, I spent a total of $13 on meals out. It was only because my husband and I went on a camping trip and an animal stole our breakfast food. So I know this is one of those like only in Colorado moments.
Such a Corinne thing to say.
Right.
Okay. But I not think all Coloradans are like that. Everyone listening.
My husband's pandemic adventure was that he biked the entire Colorado. Well, not the entire. He biked about 550 miles of the Colorado Trail, which is a trail through the mountains of Colorado that goes from Denver to the southwest corner of Colorado.
Kind of like the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail.
It's like mini Appalachian Trail, exactly. And so he wanted to do a sort of tester night because you have to carry, he carried everything, camping gear, food, everything on his mountain bike. So we did a tester night where he biked and I hiked and we met up at a campsite. And sadly for us, an animal, we think maybe a fox, stole our breakfast food in the night. And so we went out for coffee and muffins the next day. So I think in 3 months, I spent $13 on meals out. So yeah, I think my overall income is about down 10%. But I think the question mark is that normally fourth quarter is my busiest for translation. And so mm-hmm. I think it remains to be seen whether that's going to be true, that normally fourth quarter is booming. I don't know if that's true for you guys, but I find like, especially my European clients, they come back from their August off and are like, oh, geez.
I was going to say, we
have to get cracking. So yeah, Eve, over to you.
I was going to say, just to comment about the going out to eat thing, I think now that's replaced for all of us. Instead of like taking our backpacking trip to Switzerland, we think we can go to the, you know, we're going to try to socially distance and go to a restaurant. It's like a big adventure. You know, this morning I actually went to the grocery store before I came and got ready for our call. And I thought like, this is such a complicated thing, you know? So yeah, just those small things are, you know, we spend less money because it's a big deal to go out.
Right.
So it's like, that's instead of our vacation, right? Yeah. So from my perspective, I have seen a pickup from agency clients and from most of my end clients. And like you said, Corinne, I've seen what I consider a usual August slowdown, especially for my French European clients, which is a normal thing that I would expect. But I wouldn't say things are fully back to normal. And I do anticipate an overall decline for the year. And you can see, I think I'm very OCD in some ways, but you can see that Corinne and Karen are much more OCD than I am in tracking. I, you know, 15%, 30%, 25%.
I was just spitballing there.
Yeah. For me, I definitely will see an overall decline, but I won't be able to do the numbers exactly. I could.
Okay, just so this doesn't seem like some mystical thing, because I'm like the world's worst numbers person. I took what I made in the first 8 months of the year, divided it by 8, uh-huh. and then multiplied that by 12.
I have the way to do reporting, and I do it periodically throughout the year. I just don't do it maybe as consistently as you guys do.
But I just sort of thought, like, if I, you know, come up with an average month's income for the first 8 months of this year, and then if I make that as an average, you know, for 12 months, how much will my income be down? But like I said, major question mark is where does fourth quarter go, because that's when I usually make, you know, a good deal of my income for the year.
Right. And I know we've talked about in the past, you know, it's always good to be able to pull your numbers, and I actually can do that. I have the tools to do it. I just don't always do it. So, and so you talked about, your people coming to your courses. I've done kind of what everybody else has done too. Use some of that downtime to focus on, you know, training for myself and working on my own special projects. So.
Great. So one thing I personally have been trying to work on during the pandemic is to adopt an and mindset, as in, this is nothing any of us would have chosen to live through, certainly, and it offers some opportunities and also shakes us out of our established way of doing things. So for example, in my business, I've been able to do a large amount of conference interpreting training that is rarely offered online or in person in the US for that matter, which has been a major silver lining. So rather than having to travel to Europe, I was able to do a lot of it online. And then because I didn't have to travel, I was able to put some money toward, for example, a new website for training for translators. I've also been exercising a lot more, like my crazy athlete daughter got me into strength training, which I never tried in my life, but I really enjoy. And then of course the extra family time. Like my daughter finished high school during the pandemic, and she's normally away at least half the summer with her mountain biking team and various other activities. But this time, because of the pandemic, we got to spend a lot more time with her before she has now moved out to start her university mm-hmm. education remotely. So I wanted to ask the rest of you, have there been any silver linings or anything going better for you personally? So Eve, how about if we start with you?
Sure. Yeah, I thank you for that question. Thanks for that question, Corinne. And I want to say that you always encourage us to look at the bright side. So well, no, I do appreciate that. I do.
Whether or not it's warranted. You know, yeah. I do feel like one of my problems in life is like unwarranted positivity, but here we go. Sometimes it's an asset.
No, but yeah, and especially in these crazy times, I think right. I think it's really important. You know, we've been talking to our mm-hmm. kids about that. Like, okay, you know, we have the pandemic, but you have food on the table, so we're good. Yeah. So yeah, I was just thinking, you know, we've all had a lot of disappointments. You know, we've had to cancel trips. We can't see our extended family. Like normally at this time, our listeners probably know I'm originally from Anchorage, Alaska. So I usually take one or two trips a year, and I'm getting the Alaska itch, and I keep thinking, oh, but I can't really go. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
This would be a time when I would go up there. But back to your question about being positive. I think that one of the things for me too, is I've been able to spend more time with my family, and specifically with my children who are both teenagers. And so out there, any of you out there who have ever met a teenager know that they're all usually really busy with their own activities. And so we hardly get to talk anymore. Like usually I'm just dropping them off and, you know, they're breathing, hardly able to breathe in between stuffing food in their face
right.
in the car.
Throwing some food at them and then right on to the next thing.
So a positive thing there is that, you know, we've really been able to slow down. We've been reading books together. You know, some of them are, you know, fiction books. Some of them are philosophical books. We've been discussing the philosophical things about life. And this is kind of related to what Corinne said earlier. We are going on a backpacking trip that I thought of because I was encouraged Ooh. By Corinne's husband, Dan. I just thought that his trip on the Colorado Trail was so awe-inspiring, which I would never do that.
Me but either, I, for the record.
But I thought, yeah, right. But what could I do that for me is kind of a special challenging outdoor trip that I could do? And I came up with backpacking with my family. So, cool. And we are, my husband and I are convinced that the boys wouldn't have agreed to do that. And they would have weaseled out of it if it wasn't for the isolation of the pandemic. So now they're desperate too to get out of their house.
So to do anything. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and we all enjoyed planning, you know, getting ready for this trip. So from a work perspective, I would say again, what I said before is that I've been doing a lot more training in various related fields and not necessarily in translation, but in subject matter areas like more like market research, which I specialize in, copy editing, things like that. And I've also been able to find some time to focus on some projects that were on the back burner that I kept, you know, kicking myself for not doing. And now I've had the time.
Great. Okay, Karen, how about you?
Yes, well, at the beginning, my and was that, and this means I have time to deal with the family, right? The slowdown in work. I had three kids when one came home from university, 16, 18, and 20-year-olds at home with me. My husband was in France for 10 weeks, March to May.
You were really
hospitalized
in the thick of it at the start of
parent,
the, I
right.
mean,
he
in
left
your personal
here,
life, right?
Yeah, so when we left here, COVID was in Italy. But, you know, we were at that stage of things. So we knew there was a chance he would have to stay, but he had to go. His dad was ill, very ill, not COVID. So like every household, we dealt with the denial and the grief of all the plans that had to be discarded, and we restructured and we had all the concerns about the virus itself and all that. And I had time for that. And I wouldn't have had time to deal with that with my 16, 18 and 20-year-old and helping them to deal with that. If I'd had a full workload, you know, couldn't have done it. Now, as those two of those kids are at university, and we still have one at home, but, you know, driving, independent, all that. My husband's furloughed. So although I'm married and normally a smaller second income, I'm now the only smaller income.
Right.
So we're looking. So the and for us is, you could look at this as a positive or a negative, but let's call it a positive. The and is in what do we want to do for the next till we retire, let's say. So, because
20 years,
we have this
right, yeah.
one 16-year-old remaining in the house. So we were thinking about, you know, we're just doing the last couple of years of until we don't have children at home. But now, because healthcare is associated with employment in the US, and my husband is furloughed, he's the one who has our healthcare. We're now paying for it, and he needs to, that we suspect his company won't survive.
Mm-hmm. And for non-US listeners, paying for your own health insurance in the US is a huge, huge hit.
Well, we're looking it's $1,700 a month for our family of five.
So right. This is not just
$1,700 a month.
Right. Not just a couple of $100
a month. Mortgage,
right.
But it's you know, it's a big. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
it's a big hit.
So the point is, to answer your question, we're thinking about, and what do we want to do for the next 15 years, say 20 right. years. So we're just bringing, we have savings, we can manage without income for a while, but basically we've come to the conclusion that we're both open to opportunities at this point. Mm-hmm. If something comes up for him, that's great. If something comes up for me that's radically different, you know, I love what I do and I had no plans to change it, but hey, we need to be open to opportunities. So that's the mindset change. If you like, you're looking at how this is dealt with our mind, how we look at this from a mindset standpoint. And that's been the big thing, you know, it could be radical change for me, not for him, or by, you know, and who knows what's going to turn up, but that is, that's one of the and questions for us.
Interesting. Yeah. And Alex, how about you?
Well, like you were saying, Corinne, that online trainings and workshops just kind of fly off the shelves. I was doing a ton of trainings in the beginning, so that was kind of my and, just because I normally, like you also said, you wouldn't have done them, they wouldn't have been available. And I think interpreters are also a notoriously fickle bunch when it comes to actually committing and booking a training, because it's like, there might be a job, maybe I will go, maybe I won't go.
Right. And I didn't even think about that, but that's so true. Right. Yeah.
It really is. And you know, now there were just no excuses. Mm-hmm. So I did a bunch of online trainings, and then eventually I had like a Zoom burnout after like a full month of living on Zoom.
Like all of us, right?
That was, like everybody.
You liked it for like a week, right?
Exactly. It was really cool and exciting, but then, yeah. I just kind of once the depression of like no more bookings, everything got canceled, once that was kind of over, I actually kind of started enjoying the quietness a little bit, because usually March, April, May, they would have been, you know, going completely crazy. Those would have been some of the biggest months of the year. And it was just kind of nice to be forced to, well, it wasn't obviously nice, but you know, it was different. It was a change of pace, a forced change of pace. And I think it might have been good for a lot of us, including me, just because, like Karen was saying, you know, you work, what was it? You work hard and I forgot exactly what you said.
I said hard and fast.
Yeah, hard and fast. Right. Exactly.
I push through the words fairly, you know. I'm not a 2000s word a day woman, you know.
Right. But, you know, I think oftentimes for freelancers, especially if the work is 7 days a week, then it's 7 days a week and you just don't take any breaks. And I think it was nice to be forced to take the break, because I know of a lot of colleagues who had burnouts in the past. And so it was kind of, that was the kind of the silver lining, you know, you were forced to take a break. And I started working out more. I started running. I didn't quite go hiking or mountain biking or anything, but I started running. So that's
having animals still your food.
There's still more pandemic out there. So I'm always what might be in your future. We're not through it yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
Well, okay. Yeah, thanks, everybody. That was all of it was inspiring, really. And everybody kind of has, you know, some of the things are in common and some of the things we have different approaches for. So thanks for sharing all that. So we're going to move on to our final question, which is, what is our panel's advice for other freelancers, now that it does look like the pandemic, at least in the US and probably everywhere, is not going to be resolved anytime soon in some, you know, in one fashion or another. And so we know that for a lot of us, that involves a lot of juggling, especially if you have kids who aren't able to attend in-person school and they're home all day with you while you are working, you know, from whatever, little kids to almost adults, teenagers. So over to the panel, and what would you advise our listeners to do to keep their sanity and to keep their businesses thriving, so to the extent that they can? So do you have any pandemic specific marketing tips or other tips? And Corinne, how about if we start with you?
Sure. So I recently wrote a newsletter about this, but I think a lot of the tips kind of bear repeating. So first, and I was saying this to Alex before we started recording, I've said this a million times, but I say it to myself too, let yourself be sad about the sad things. Like just because missing a conference or a trip or a high school graduation or, you know, Karen's daughter's study abroad got canceled, just the fact that it's not life and death doesn't mean that it's not really sad, yeah. Especially when it's something that just cannot be made up later. You know, that I think, you know, in a way, when I look at my own daughter, who's going to be, you know, 18 in a couple of months, like, you know, we try to sort of look at the bright side and laugh about it. But the reality is she missed her, you know, almost her whole last semester of high school and worked her tail off to get into her dream university that she now attends via Zoom. You know, I mean, and that's a really hard thing in the life of a young adult who is super excited about their, you know, first independent experiences, you know, so let yourself be sad about the sad things. Second, try to find some new opportunities that you can pursue, not despite the pandemic, but because of the pandemic. So I think the things that all of us were talking about, whether it's, you know, like Alex taking up running or doing more online training, or maybe, you know, Karen thinking, you know, maybe I'm going to branch out in a whole new career direction. And maybe, you know, I or my husband will find something that we really enjoy that we wouldn't have been pushed to do without the pandemic. Third, make sure when you strategize about your business that you're not trying to create a demand for your work where there is none. So if the demand for your service or your specialization has been really hard hit by the pandemic, the solution may actually be don't stick with it. You know, admit that maybe that area of work is not going to rebound anytime soon. And my pandemic specific marketing tip is use job search sites to tell who still has money and who is hiring. So for example, if I see on LinkedIn or on DevEx, which is an international development jobs platform, that a certain NGO is hiring, undoubtedly they're not hiring for a translator, but that tells me that they still have funding and are continuing to, launch new projects, or they're at least anticipating that they're going to stay in business. So I actually think that job search sites, which are normally, you know, of very little value to freelancers, are actually quite valuable right now because it tells you who has money.
Sure, sure. A way of doing business intelligence. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for those great tips, Corinne. So Alex, tell us what you think about all that.
I think at the moment, it's especially important to be there for your clients. I can only speak for direct clients because in Germany, agencies aren't a huge thing. And I think for direct clients, they're kind of as lost as we were in the beginning. But I think for us, we had to make sure that our business was working again. So how do we interpret remotely? How do we do this on Zoom? That was kind of what we were focusing on while they had to make sure that their business was staying afloat. And so I think if we can really support our clients, it might not necessarily even be in the way that we want to work for them in terms of the work environment or working conditions or the planning or the scheduling, you know, things might be a bit more flexible, a bit more unorthodox or whatever. But if we help them just kind of make do with what they can sort of whip up, I think everybody's going to be eternally grateful. And clients have told me that, you know, they know this isn't ideal, but they're so grateful that we're so flexible and we're helping them out in this and that way. And I think that is very important. The good thing is too, that you can actually proactively go out to your clients and kind of edify them about this. You know, did you know that we can also interpret for you if you're using Teams or if you're using WebEx or if you're using this and that? So I think that has gone over pretty well with a lot of clients. And I guess that could be kind of considered a marketing tool. And I think that also goes hand in hand with just a tip for the interpreting community, because, you know, I'm one of those people who doesn't have children, so I have a lot of time to do all these trainings. But I think equally it's important for somebody like me to go out there and talk to colleagues who do have children, who have to do homeschooling, who have to make sure that, you know, the home life is okay, that we kind of exchange information, that it's not just, you know, everybody for themselves, but that we actually stick together and kind of let each other know what works, what doesn't work, tips and tricks. I think that's very important. Mm-hmm. And lastly, this is not really a tip. It's just something that I've noticed in Munich here, just because I know that two colleagues have already said, one of them is already out of the profession. One of them said that they were going to leave relatively soon, just because, you know, the financial situation. And I've heard a little bit of talk about that, and I just want to make sure that everybody knows that it's totally okay if you have to take time away from the profession. Like Karen, like you were saying, if a great opportunity presents itself, that is completely fine. And I think especially for interpreters, oftentimes it's kind of a point of pride that, you know, we don't need this, we can make it work. But even if you can't make it work in this situation, this is an unprecedented global pandemic, you need to put food on the table, you need to pay your bills. So I think everybody should just be a little bit more understanding. I don't know. This is just kind of an appeal, a very broad appeal to the community.
I think that's
community.
A good, well, because I heard someone say, so I recently took the Cambridge Conference Interpretation course, which has, you know, always been in person, but this year was online. And someone in that course said, two things for interpreters are true. Number one, a lot of interpreters were underprepared for something like this to happen. I mean, also considering that I think interpreting is a lot more subject to, like, you know, you could get really sick and not be able to work for a month because your voice doesn't sound good. You know, whereas you can translate from your bed. Like, I've done that before. And it is also true that it would have been almost impossible to be completely prepared for something like this.
For sure.
So, you know, if you were underprepared as an interpreter, I think that sends you a message for the future. But I think, like you said, Alex, I think you also need to be a little gentle with yourself and say, no one could have anticipated a downturn in work that would have been this serious. And you would have had to be, you know, set up financially a lot better than even most people who are very financially conservative would have been, especially if, let's say, if you're the opposite of you, Alex, like, let's say you're the sole income for your family.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're fortunate in that, you know, you were set up well financially and you have a partner and stuff like that. But let's say you were the sole income for your family, you know, I think it would be almost impossible to have been adequately prepared. And you need to be a little, you know, kind to yourself and not say, it's my fault. You know, this is shameful. It's not.
Exactly. It's totally not shameful. And I think, you know, I was talking to another colleague the other day, and they hadn't had a conference interpreting day in the booth since February. And I think no matter how well you would have been prepared in a theoretical case, nobody can really, you know what I mean? Like, nobody can really prepare for that appropriately. Yeah. So I think it's just, don't worry about how it's going to be perceived by your colleagues. Be gentle on yourself and just do what you have to.
What I pulled from what you said, just kind of, all that was super interesting, but I pulled out two ideas. One was your emphasis on flexibility, you know, that we all need to be flexible. I guess some of us have been told that our whole lives. You need to be flexible to survive. And in this pandemic, like you said, you know, it's really key, going back to what you said about the clients, I think, that you really need to be flexible, not imposing your own. It has to be this way. You know, we really are there to serve them, and being flexible is going to help you through this. And then also, I love the focus on community, you know, the idea where you said, you know, sharing with each other, helping each other, and that the second last idea you had about being kind to yourself. So thanks, Alex. Karen, what are your thoughts on that topic?
Hang on, you know what, I'm just gonna remind myself of the question. What was the initial question? You've said loads of fun things, but what was the question? Oh, it was advice for other freelancers, right? That's where we're going. So I started for myself with that idea of being gentle and kind and focused on mental and physical health. That was a priority for me. So I'd recommend that everyone finds whatever it is that brings personal balance for you. Whether for me, it's going for walks around the neighborhood with the dog. It's not going for long, big hikes in the mountains. But, you know, and my yoga studio closed down and I started practicing yoga every day at home. And I watched classic movies because I couldn't read. I couldn't concentrate on good books in the spring. It was just too hard to do. I was struggling with that. So whatever it is, I recommend that you find that personal balance and that you be kind to yourself as well as to others, and know that we are not all going to be maximum productivity and doing all these things we've had on the back burner for years. Sometimes you need to sit and do nothing but a jigsaw puzzle and watch three episodes of something in a row, and that is really fine, right? So that would be my first tip, that acceptance of not being your productive, go-getting, whatever that you think you need to be because you've got all this free time. I did pick up some reading and subject matter expertise training and stuff in the summer and went to a couple of online conferences, but that wasn't in the beginning of the pandemic. So my second tip or idea would be to keep up on whatever grants and loans are available for all of us who are in a cash crunch, who need it. So don't leave grant money on the table if you're struggling, and get loans if you need them to help with cash flow. It's what businesses do when times are tough, and we are businesses, right? So my savings cushion in my business accounts lasted for several months. But in July, I was going, I would have hit cash flow problems if I hadn't received what's called a paycheck, a PPP loan, Paycheck Protection Program. It was the US federal government, it was a program put in place. That money will be forgiven. So that's, you know, a couple of months of pay for me. And I also got a loan that I will have to pay back for the Americans listening. It was an EIDL. So don't leave that money on the table, and don't think that you're, you know, failing in some way to take a loan that you're going to have to pay back in 2021 or 2022. If you need to do something to keep your business stable and strong during this time, that's completely normal and fine. The associations I'm a member of have provided really good information for members. Mm-hmm. I've seen messages coming out from ATA and ITI, which are the two I'm heavily involved with, and that told me all I needed to do. So if you lack confidence in that area and you're not sure what to do and what's available and whether you qualify, then I would join your association for your region or nation and find out what people are doing and what kinds of money is available.
And that would be just to follow up on that too, Karen, I think bottom line, no one should feel bad about doing, you know, any of the government programs that are available now. And also remind yourself, and I know that there are, you know, this isn't 100% true, but it's 95% true that as freelancers, we pay into the unemployment insurance system, but cannot mm-hmm. collect unemployment mm-hmm. when we don't have work. So if you need a reason to, you know, feel better about taking any of the PPP or, you know, small business programs, just remember that. I know, you know, someone's going to comment and say, like, there are ways for freelancers to collect unemployment, which is true, but it is not like someone with a salary job who is almost immediately eligible for unemployment when they're laid off. And we as freelancers pay the same amount of unemployment payments or insurance as everybody else does.
To make yourself feel good about it too, think about those billion-dollar companies who got small business loans, and don't feel guilty about that.
I don't personally feel guilty about it, but because we're high taxpayers, you know. Okay, Europeans are currently laughing at the thought of
for the U.S. being a high pretty high bracket. Yeah.
But my husband and I pay a high rate of tax for people who are living in the U.S. We remember what our rates were when we were earning in Ireland, for instance. It was more than double what we pay here now. But anyway, the point is, it's a system, and we use a system according to what's appropriate. So as long as you're not trying to twist the system illegally, of course, take what's available. I do have one more tip that's perhaps more specifically related to freelancers in translation and interpreting, though, because those first two I gave could be applied more generally. So what saved my income is the diversification I had within my narrow area of expertise, right? I'm a narrow, highly specialized freelancer. But having the non-native editing work, and all those scientists went home and I couldn't get into the lab, and they pulled out these half-written papers. Well, I was going to say out the drawer, but off their computer desktop. And they finished them off and they sent them for editing, right? So that saved me. So people sometimes look down on diversification in the same way as they might look down on people getting a part-time job or something else. And I want to say that having that other string in your bow, whatever it might be, can really be useful and has certainly made my year much more viable. So my diversification benefits my subject matter expertise and my target language writing. So it benefits my core activity of translation. But even if it doesn't, they can still be valuable. I know translators who provide OCR and document creation services. I know some who teach yoga, which is very good for your, you know, overall well-being. Yeah. I know someone who picked up a job working for the US Census, which was hiring this summer, took a part-time job to try and fill the gaps. There are varied, very diverse examples of what can work in these odd times. And I'm completely with you, Alex, that we need to not judge people for doing what they need to do for their family, either to fill the gap or to keep their mental health sane. You know, some people will be really struggling to be at home all the time, and they take a part-time job at Starbucks because, or their local coffee shop, because they want interaction with people. You know, there could be all sorts of reasons for doing something that is not what we have been doing. And I think so my advice would be is to be open to those things and not consider them as inferior or to consider yourself as a failure because you do something different in these odd times.
Thank you, Karen, for those wonderful thoughtful ideas. So you guys had wonderful ideas, and I wanted to kind of give my perspective just on a slightly related topic, but a little bit different take on it. I feel like you guys have all said, you know, keeping this positive mindset, I think will help us all in what we're doing in our work and personal life. And something that I've seen recently in that, in essence, we're living in a reduced world, and as we know, in different ways, but I'm particularly talking here about in terms of space as to, related to where we're actually living. And so I think all of us are literally living more in our homes than ever before. And of course, you know, before we lived in our homes, I own my home or you rent a home or whatever, but I mean, literally we used to spend much more time outside in public places and public spaces than I think, like I never, of course we did it, but it wasn't necessarily conscious, right? That was just the way you lived. And so now I think it's really important to make the spaces that we are basically confined to in some ways in terms of the pandemic, make sure that we're really satisfied and feel good about being in those spaces. Mm-hmm. So my idea on that from a professional perspective is, and kind of like you said, Corinne, earlier, like, and we talked about, look, we're not spending money on trips. So maybe we actually have some, you know, some funds that we can spend towards these types of things because we're not spending them on things that we would spend otherwise. So from a professional perspective, you know, do you have everything you need in your work, that literal space that you're working in to work comfortably? So don't think of it as a splurge, you know, budget for it or take money that you didn't spend on that trip to Switzerland, and think of it as a necessity. So for example, do you need a new desk? Get one so that you're happy in that space you're stuck in. You know, do you need a new monitor? Do you need a second monitor, a third monitor? Is that what you've been wanting? Do that. Do you need different pictures or my case, any pictures on the wall to inspire me, because I still haven't done that in my new house. Do you need a new coat of paint, or would you actually prefer to work out of a different room in your house altogether? Or would you think to yourself, sometimes I do that. I'll work upstairs, and then I'll think, in this time of day or this, I'm going to work downstairs. It gives me a new things to look at and a different place to be. So I just think the idea is do everything that you need to do to make where you work the most welcoming space and the most conducive to productive work as you can. I think an example that Alex can speak more to, because I'm not an interpreter, but I've just heard interpreters I know talking about this, is many interpreters have been, at least in the US, maybe not so much in Europe, setting up studios or special insulated rooms in their homes from
like
which
basically
they
build a booth. Yeah, I don't know if that's a European thing, but here in the US, Alex, it seems like a lot of interpreters are starting to build a booth.
Yeah, tell us the European.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know if that's a huge thing. I know of like a handful of colleagues who've done that in their own offices, and they're kind of renting them out as sort of semi hubs, interpreting hubs.
Oh, interesting. Ooh, so they're renting. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. I'm not
that's
sure
a,
how
that's a diversification for you.
That is definitely a diversification. I'm not sure how business is doing in that regard, but that's definitely an idea. Just because a lot of conferences are now taking place online, and so if you have that insulated space, which I don't, I'm basically working out of my home office, which is the glorified word, or in reality, it's my bedroom. you know, it kind of works for me just because we have very thick walls. So even if somebody rings the doorbell, I wouldn't hear it in here, which is a blessing and a curse. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's a huge thing. If that is a huge thing, that's I would like to know because that's interesting. Yeah.
Well, I guess that was just my example too for, you know, whatever the various changes that you feel you need, not you, Alex, but you as in everyone, need to feel to really feel comfortable and protective in your space, do that. And so secondly, you know, from my workspace, I'm also, I think we should try to do that to your current living space. And there is that kind of, you know, before the pandemic, when people talking about work and living, you know, that line gets blurred, right? So I think it's really important that in our regular living space, we feel that way too. So we may end up living in this kind of, I've said, reduced way for the next months or really even years is what I'm, don't start crying, everyone, you know, but I, depending on your approach. But yeah, so I've lately been thinking about how can I fix up my indoor space and my outdoor space to maintain privacy among the people who live here, even though we love each other very much and also privacy vis-a-vis the outside world, but still have this feeling of freedom in your living area and not a total confinement. So I wanted to give an example in my house is that as everyone's probably sick of hearing, my house, I still consider it new. We moved here in our current house 3 years ago, and we have what we think is a great porch, a great patio, and a balcony. So since we moved in, we weren't really focused on other improvements, and we were focused on other improvements and not on our backyard. It still has no landscaping, and I'm sure the neighbors loved that. Yeah. But now I feel like with the pandemic, you know, going seemingly here to stay for a while anyway, I feel like for us, having a nicer outdoor living area would open up our house to more possibilities, maybe let us entertain our friends in a social distancing way, and would help us to feel less confined. And so for me, I've reprioritized my goals for house projects. So, and I was thinking too, kind of separately from that, I think that small changes can take off stress. So I've been making jokes to my family that I needed a new house dress. I don't know if everybody knows what that is. A relic from another era, right? If you think of in the U.S. anyway, we think of the 50s house, you know, 50s housewife. I'm putting
like one step above a nightgown. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I'm like, I need a house dress. And then I was so excited because I saw on the internet that house dresses were trending.
Naturally.
That was a big article for a National Public Radio, which is a big radio network in the U.S. And so, so just to look at that, for me, maybe it makes me happy to wear a house dress, you know, but instead of being sad that we don't have a reason to wear our favorite blazer or, you know, you need to embrace other ways to feel good about what you wear, you know, at home so you're comfortable, but don't get sucked into, you know, I feel like always just wearing sad at home clothes, you know, like we still want to dress in a way that gives us positive energy. So I was kind of more focusing on the home front and how we're dressing, how we're living in our space. So we, you know, just so that we know the pandemic, we are not giving up.
So those are great ideas. Great ideas, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Karen and Alex, for joining us. And I'm sure that our listeners will enjoy hearing your perspective on freelancing in this very unusual time that calls for out-of-the-box solutions. And just a reminder to our listeners that if you don't yet subscribe to Speaking of Translation, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And your reviews and ratings are great help to other people who might enjoy the show. And Karen and Alex, if our listeners would like to keep up with you online, where can they find you? So Karen, where can we keep up with you?
Oh, well, if you, Macmillan Translation has I have a Facebook page and a LinkedIn profile and all that. On Twitter, I'm Kim Xlator, chemistry translator, Chem X.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes. Okay. And Alex, how about you? Oh, you're muted, Alex.
Of course that happens.
We nearly
of
course managed. That always happens.
I'm so sorry. I ruined a perfect stream.
Now it's officially a Zoom session.
Yes, and I was okay. It's okay. Had to be the real Zoom session.
Right. Yeah, no, it wasn't a real Zoom session until now, until you have Absolutely. To remind someone that they're talking and still muted.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Right. So I also have a LinkedIn and a Facebook, but I'm rarely on that. So if you want to catch me, I'm also on Twitter, which is at @ACGInterpret. But you can also find us on our other podcast, The Troublesome Terps, at @TroubleTerps, also on Twitter. That's where you can get a hold of us. Mm-hmm.
And Thank if you, you are an interpreter or at all interested in interpreting and you don't listen to Troublesome Terps, you should.
What rock have you been living under? But yeah.
Yes, exactly. Where have you been? So we'll put that in the show notes too.
Well, yeah, I wanted to thank our visiting panelists too, and I thank our listeners, and feel free to visit our website, which as you probably know by now, but I'll tell you again, is speakingoftranslation.com, and you can leave a comment there, or you can let us know an idea for a future episode. So thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.